fucking notes.
Well, first and foremost, notes or no notes, but welcome to the first episode of Not Another Film Podcast, the working title for our podcast movie show. This is where we watch a movie from our childhood and we check to see if it holds up and if it's still good or not. So this week we are celebrating the release of Steven Spielberg's giant blockbuster hand job known as Ready Player One.
Yeah.
We should also note none of us have seen this movie yet. No. It could be awesome. So.
I'm gonna now.
Have either of you guys have either of you read the book?
No.
You say got my hand job in movie theaters.
Well, got to. We're gonna save that for later in the podcast.
No, and maybe.
Yeah. Oh, all
right. I not read the book now. I've had the audiobook credit for like a year.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah, because I've read the book, so I wasn't sure. All right.
All right, so, I have not read the book.
That ends the intro.
Yes.
We all look to Ian, waiting for him to tell us what to do.
Well, first and foremost, what I want to do is go around the horn and introduce everybody. First off, my name is Ian Gears. I will be one of your hosts for this podcast. To my left, we have Miss Lauren Grace Thompson. Lauren, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Awesome. Lauren, how did you come to Smart House for the first time?
Well, obviously through the Disney Channel, the Disney Channel original movie family of movies. I used to watch the Disney Channel every night. I would just watch whatever Disney Channel movie was playing that night, which more often than not was this and then the 13th Year. I feel like I've seen...
You love this actor.
And as a
stay tuned.
Truly, as a result, I feel like those may be the two movies that I've seen most in my life. Which I just realized...
And what a life you've led.
Man.
Awesome. To my right, we have Mr. Eric Eilerson. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Awesome. What is your experience with the film Smart House?
Man, vastly inadequate. I'm learning now.
Yeah.
No, I similarly...
Step up your fucking game. We are here to play.
We are. I was similar, though, when I was younger, having Disney on all the time. I had Nickelodeon, Channel 170, Disney 172, and Cartoon Network was 176.
Beep.
I was constantly going between them all. And a lot of Disney Channel original movies, I gotta say, my favorite was Brink. I've probably seen that the
Solid
most.
Choice.
But Double Teamed was on the most, I feel like I remember, when I was a kid. Ooh. That was like everything.
Very unfortunately named basketball film.
Yeah,
right?
It is, like the girl with the twin girls that luckily I didn't get when I was younger. But
I barely get it now.
I vaguely understood that it was funny, but I didn't know why.
That's a lot of Disney movies.
So just somehow through osmosis of culture, I just knew that was something that was apparently funny.
I remember around the same time that movie came out, there was an Orlando Jones, Eddie Griffin film also called Double Team that was like out in theaters. So when people refer to Double Team thinking it's a Disney Channel original movie, I always in the back of my mind go, Eddie Griffin didn't do a Disney Channel original movie, did he?
Doubtful.
Doubtful.
But on that note, Ian, what's your history with Smart House?
Oh, man, I loved this movie when I was a kid, and I haven't seen it in about probably 15 years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a long shot, maybe like 10 years. But it was an experience rewatching it. So we're going to dive right on in. Smart House, Disney Channel movie, 1999.
Mm.
It was a simpler time.
Yep.
Right?
Yes. Was it?
I mean, I think so.
I was, what, 6 years old? So yeah, it was definitely a simpler time. Yeah.
I was 8, and it was blissful.
It was great, and I think watching this movie, I realized why people were less constrained, because none of their clothes fit properly, so you just felt looser and generally more free.
That is absolutely true. We are going to get to some of these clothing choices.
Oh, God.
First and foremost, I know, because Lauren, you and I watched this together. Eric, did you happen to notice the little director's credit on this film?
That's my first fucking note.
Yeah.
LeVar Burton
directed
this.
By LeVar Burton. What? Reading Rainbows, LeVar Burton.
Geordie LaForge, I assume, wearing his visor throughout the filming. In my headcanon, I screamed out. What? I saw that. I was thrown for the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking watching this knowing... that LeVar Burton directed it, mainly because this is such a weird, like, niche plastic film. Like, the whole movie kind of feels like a toy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's a weird film because it's... I guess I don't associate that with you know, the edgy character LeVar Burton played on Reading Rainbow.
Yeah, you know that.
But also, he apparently directed a bunch of Star Treks.
Yeah.
I feel like I knew he had directed.
He's directed a bunch.
But it is weird that the fact that this movie's plastic, because nowadays this would be a movie made around the Smart House toy, I feel. Like, okay, we need to sell this toy. We're going to make a movie about it, and that's how we'll sell this line.
It would be the Lego House.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which I don't think we're far off.
I can see the, like, Star Trek influence in it, though. Like, I feel like there's stuff there that is very comparable. Like, when you know that.
The fucking replicator.
Exactly. The replicator and the fucking, like, digital.
The floors.
Yeah, exactly. The floors. Oh. But, like, the fact that it's this, she creates this immersive world. The floors. Then kind of, like, taking on
the floors.
Jordy
LaFleur. Jordy LaFleur.
Title of the episode.
So I want to start out first. After, since we just established this was directed by auteur director LeVar Burton, by also saying the first scene of this film, Paperboy riding by on his bicycle, and...
Paperboy,
all about that Paperboy, riding around on his bicycle, and throws a newspaper towards a normal-looking house, and a giant Doc Ock arm reaches out, grabs... the newspaper, and insults a child.
Well, the kid sucks at throwing papers.
Okay.
If that's your fucking job, it is 20 feet from the front
straight
door.
In the bushes. He put it straight in the bushes.
Eric, I'm going to ask you this. When you were 10 years old, did you have a job?
Never.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
Well, then I'm gonna go and say bicycle director. This kid is a lot more responsible than you were.
Oh, he absolutely is.
He's an entrepreneur.
I should have looked up to him when I was a kid instead of just eating Cheerios and watching Smart House all the time.
Well, this kid was probably raising money to try and buy his own Smart House.
You know, he, like many other characters in this movie, is just trying his best.
He really is.
Let's come back to that later.
We're going to actually take that and go right into the introduction of the Cooper family. Uh-huh. Yes, this is our central family of the movie. We have Paul Cooper, played by Kevin Kleiner.
The best casting ever. This guy is a dad of dads.
Dude.
That headshot goes across your desk, you're like, oh, cool, he's the dad.
He is the dad. He's handsome.
He's the hot dad.
Yeah.
He's not just Kevin Klein, he's Kevin Kleiner.
I mean, he's Kevin Kleinist and everything, but it's really great.
They wanted Kevin Klein first, but then they were just like, who else do we got?
Little odd.
Kevin Kleiner. Yeah. Let's bust this up. So that's Paul Cooper. Paul Cooper works for a sports equipment distributor?
Yeah. Well, you find out that, like, maybe two-thirds into the movie, because he keeps talking about work, but it's a little unspecific.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but then he talks about, oh, yeah, those mitts and balls will get out. And I'm like, whoa, these mitts?
Yeah, he says...
Why did you mention mitts?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, he says that next shipment of bats and gloves will be on the truck this afternoon. And it's such a weird, like, I love it because it is such Disney Channel logic where it is like, oh, yeah, our dad's going to have a job, but he's going to have a cool job.
Yeah.
He's going to work with sports gear.
Yeah.
And in the classic Disney way, his wife is dead.
Yeah. Totally dead.
Somehow forgot that plot point, though.
Like,
even though it's like
dead.
A main plot of the movie.
I completely forgot about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's arguably what this movie hinges on.
It does.
It is a giant metaphor for replacing the mom.
It is. It's about grief. It's all about how we get over grief and how we replace it with
Ben
robots.
Cooper, who is the son suffering from this.
Yes.
Which makes him possibly the biggest fucking shit in any Disney movie.
He is such an asshole, this kid.
Everything bad in this movie hinges on Ben sucking.
Well, and he also does the classic, like, parent logic of, like, whenever your kids do something that you're really proud of, they're my kids, but whenever they do something that you're not proud of, they're, like, your spouse's kids.
Yep.
And he does that with the house.
Yeah.
So many times in this movie, it's like, that's why I freaking won this fucking house, Dad, so that our lives could be easier. And then when the house starts freaking out at the end, he's like, Dad, this is because you couldn't keep it in your pants, and you wanted to go fuck the creator of the smart house.
Oh, God. Dad wants to get laid so bad.
That's the other major plot point of this movie. In fact, I would say the B plot. The B, C, and D plots
the
of this
D
movie.
The D plot, especially.
Dad trying to get it in.
God. He's literally, there's a scene, I wrote it in my notes, there's literally a scene where he is drinking a glass of water and acting so thirsty. I'm like, dude, this is thirsty upon thirsty upon thirsty. Like, he's trying to, like, I fuck Sarah while drinking tea.
So you would say it's thirsty Thirstier.
Yes, I would. Kevin Kline or Thirstier.
Fantastic. Ben Cooper, of course, played by Disney Channel alum Ryan Merriman, who's in several Disney Channel original movies. We'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, luck of the Irish.
So he also, we get a great introduction to Ben Cooper because he's making dinner for his family. He has assumed the role of parent for his family since the mother is out of the picture. 6 feet under, out of the picture, if you know what I mean. And he is making tuna noodles for his family.
Which legitimately made me actually nauseated. I almost walked out of the room because that sounds so disgusting to me.
With a homemade meal, this week, try tuna noodles. Tuna noodles. Something's fishy.
Hey folks, at this point in the show, unfortunately, Eric had to step out and we had a little bit of a recording malfunction. However, we recorded the rest of the episode with Lauren and myself. So we will be there with the two of us right now. So after Ben makes tuna noodles for his family, which are delicious and disgusting. Just,
we can never talk about tuna noodles ever again. That'd be great.
We get an amazing introduction to the contest to win the Smart House.
Yes. Now,
the contest is being done, I guess, by the creator of the Smart House.
Which... Yeah, on a very basic old school website that sent me into violent flashbacks. It's like a really famous, like, it's supposed to be a big deal, this contest, and yet I think only like 8,000 people entered this.
8,411 entries, half of which we're supposed to believe were Ben Cooper, probably the night before the contest.
Yeah, and that was Ben saying it, like, being very humble about it. So it could have been about 6,000 of those.
Exactly.
With the fastest dial-up connection I've ever seen.
Oh man, nobody's making calls in this house.
No, well that's an entire point. When they call him to tell him he's won,
they can't get through because he's still on the internet.
Yeah, because he's on the phone upstairs or something. I'm trying to remember something they gave him shit about.
Oh man, if you want to date this movie, it is this situation in and of itself entirely. Yeah. But we get an introduction to Sarah the scientist. She's the brassy gal who invented the Smart House,
mm-hmm.
along with Miles, the lazy fuck who just sits on the couch and mm-hmm. makes snide remarks and looks vaguely like Paul Rubens.
Mm-hmm. Truly the feminist tale of our generation.
Exactly.
Yes.
So Sarah is the one who's invented this Smart House, and she's giving it away to a family, or to, I guess, it doesn't even need to be a family, if, like, one person, like, who's, like, the other people that are entering this casually?
I don't know, someone like you or me, or just super poor.
Yeah, it's like me entering to win, like, tickets to the Avett Brothers or something like that.
Yeah.
I've got 9 different email addresses that I'm submitting, like, different profiles under.
I also just, like, have to unpack why they're giving away a Smart House. Because this is the kind of a prototype, the first of its kind, right? But we're led to understand that, like, once they've reached a certain point in testing, they're not going to continue testing. They're not going to ask this family to kind of keep testing it and, like, giving reports. They're not going to keep checking in. The only reason she keeps checking in is because she wants to bang the dad.
Exactly. We have no sense of progress reports that are being given.
Yeah.
Like, we have no, like, little throwaway line about how Pat, which is the name of the Smart House, is, like, sending diagnostic reports to Sarah the scientist.
You know, in the way of most things, like, you know, Apple, I'm sure Apple reaches a certain point and they're like, you know what? We made a phone. We're done. We're just going to give it away to one person and then never do anything with it ever again, which is what we're led to believe is a Smart House.
If Willy Wonka can do it, then so can Sarah the scientist. I think that's what we're led to believe.
Yeah, but at least Willy Wonka tested if they were worthy of the Smart House. I guess the only test of worthiness was sending in a bunch of entries.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, like, it's diligence. That's what wins a Smart House.
And a fast dial-up.
Fast dial-up.
So wait, what happens next?
So they give away the Smart House to Ben. Ben is, his name is drawn, but he's asleep and he can't receive the call.
Bummer.
Lauren, how does Ben find out that he and his family have in fact won the Smart House?
You know, a paper.
A paper, a newsprint paper.
Well, this is after he walks into school and all of the classmates applaud him. upon walking in.
Yeah, all these kids we're led to believe make fun of him constantly. We're led to believe that Ben only has two friends, a taller, skinnier white kid, and then the cool black kid.
Yes.
And who is, I think, one of two people of color in this movie.
Yes. Eric did a tally. There's only two.
There's only two. Come on, LeVar Burton.
Yeah.
But,
Come on, LeVar Burton.
So all these people who used to shit on Ben are now like, I always knew you could do it.
I always knew you could win a contest, Ben. They totally believed in him.
I knew you had it in you. You had that serial killer, like, intensity and wonder about one thing specifically. I'm sure you could win a contest.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Are we led to believe that Ben has two hobbies, and that is entering contests and cock-blocking his dad?
Ooh, and basketball.
Oh, we can't forget about basketball.
He loves
right.
basketball. Yeah, and synchronized dancing. We'll get to that later.
Why wait?
So he has won, and he goes home and tells his dad, he's like, Dad, I won the smart house. Mm-hmm. Dad is not about it, because he reacts the way a normal human would when their child tells them, I think we should uproot our entire lifestyle and move into a science experiment.
And this is before Black Mirror, before we were all like, technology's bad, I already don't trust it.
Yeah,
this is just a kid saying, I want to move into another house, and his dad going, we already have a house.
We already have a house, but... Then the dad sees a little picture in the newspaper of Sarah the scientist, the woman who invented the smart house, and he gets stoked.
Yeah.
Yeah, the father is essentially at this point like, no, Ben, I don't want to move into the smart house. I don't want to move into the smart house. Hey.
And then I want to know what love is. Just plays in the background.
Exactly. Which leads to the baseline of this movie. Mm-hmm. That the whole decision to move into the smart house is contingent on dad's horniness.
That is the inciting incident, ladies and gentlemen.
It's this dad just trying to get back on the dating wagon after his wife has passed away.
He wants to find love again.
But more importantly, he wants to find love again with this cute scientist lady.
Yeah, because she's smart.
Yeah, because she invented a smart house.
She has to be smart. She has a pet mouse.
Yeah, she has a pet rat.
How have we not mentioned this already? She has, runs is around. It a mouse or a rat?
I don't know.
I can't tell the difference. It was cute.
Right into the message boards.
Yes, please let us know. This is a very important question.
We'll create message boards for you to write into. Was Butler a rat or a mouse? Cool. The person who answers correctly wins a smart house.
Right, yeah, because we have that to give.
So the next scene that happens is we get what, for me as a kid, was the coolest sequence of scenes in any movie I've maybe ever seen, which is the introduction to how the smart house works.
Yes. Significantly less mind-blowing now, but... definitely made me fucking psyched when I was a kid.
Yeah, so they walk in and they're showing them the smart house. You get this incredible layout. First of all, the house, beautifully designed.
I mean, even if it wasn't a smart house, I'd take this free house.
It's a great house. It is a great house.
Yeah.
So they walk in, they're getting the tour from Sarah, and then Ange, the little sister, says, apropos of nothing, I'm hungry. I want a snack. And so Sarah says, well, why don't you ask Pat to make you something? So, Lauren, I have to ask, when you get hungry, you want a snack or something like that, especially if you're in a stranger's house or somewhere you've never been the first time, what kind of food do you ask for?
I don't know, whatever you've got around, like maybe some chips or like an apple if you've got one, maybe a granola bar.
Something nice, vaguely healthy.
Something that's easy to do. You're not going to ask them to like make you a tuna casserole
Or tuna noodles. You're not going to be able to, like, you can't go straight to tuna noodles.
No, you got to like lean into it just a little bit and kind of test the boundaries.
Yes, which leads to this chick just going straight out the gate asking for a strawberry fucking smoothie. Just says, I want a strawberry smoothie. And without blinking, Pat creates a strawberry smoothie.
Well, you know what? I appreciate her initiative. She just went balls to the wall. She's like, you know what? I'm in a smart house. I gotta fucking find out what the limits are here.
Yeah,
I gotta go too far, and you gotta tell me no.
Yeah, you make me a fucking fruit smoothie, Pat. So, robot slave, make me a smoothie.
The feminist tale of our generation. She's just fucking going for it.
And technically, since Ange asked Pat, who's played by Katie Seagal, who we will get to in a minute, to make her a smoothie, does that mean this passes the Bechdel test.
Emmett absolutely does think that it passes the Bechdel test. As a woman, I'm giving my stamp of approval on this one.
You heard it here, folks. Women, you can enjoy this
movie.
There
is absolutely nothing problematic about this movie.
Yes. Nothing at all. So she gets a fruit smoothie, to which we find out a lot of information in this one little chunk, which is that the smart house is fully stocked with food and provisions for months. Because underneath this smart house, I guess, is just a giant storage facility of fruits, vegetables, canned goods, meats, cheeses, fully like full charcuterie boards come up out of like the ground in this fucking movie.
Yeah, there's one point where Anne just has a fucking cheese board out.
She's watching some cartoon bullshit and she's got like what would be a $19 appetizer at the nearest restaurant.
Anne just goes all out, man. I really love this kid.
No, she knows how to live. She is fully taking advantage of this smart house.
She's fully embracing the life of luxury that has been handed to her. Not through anything she's earned, but through pure luck. So I appreciate that. That's truly the American dream.
And you know what? Just like the American dream, the next thing that happens, she spills this fruit smoothie all over the fucking floor.
Damn it.
Reminding all of us that she is a 7-year-old girl.
Yeah. Is she 7?
I don't know. Something like that.
I cannot tell how old children are.
I've lost that ability.
No, I don't.
Every child I see is somewhere between the ages of 4 and 22.
Yep.
That's about it. I just learned to stay away.
I feel like I just always assume if it's a Disney Channel movie, I feel like it is always 13.
Yeah. Everyone's 13.
Everyone is 13. All the protagonists are 13. And you can only judge every other character based on their relationship to the protagonist. So I would say like 9 or 10.
9 or 10. Still too old to be spilling smoothies all over the floor of a house you just moved into.
That's true.
But alas, the smart house absorbs the spill into the floor.
Yeah.
And the floor looks good as new.
I know that was particularly mind-blowing to you, Ian.
Lauren, let me tell you something. I was a messy kid. I spilled a lot of shit. I would get excited and I get excited and spill things now.
You do.
If my house had the capability to absorb any and all messes and take them to the place we know not where, I would fucking buy that app.
Yeah.
I would live in that house.
Yeah.
I don't have an Alexa, but I would buy these, like, suck floors.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't like that description. But, like, okay, I need to know how the floors work.
I need to know where the fucking food's going.
Where is it going? And then how is it determining what needs to be sucked up and what is, like, a person?
Lauren, it's a smart house. It's not going to suck up their dog. It's not going to suck up Butler the rat mouse.
Butler's really small, though. What if he's really still?
Well, that is another question. When Smart House gets all vindictive later on in the movie, how come it doesn't find this, like, the weight of this little scampering mouse rat and suck it on up?
Well, like, I keep thinking this time, I'm like, she could easily trap them at any point by just turning the floors on. And, like, when she turns on them, she could just, like, suck their shoes in, and then they're stuck to the floor. They can't run away.
Oh my god, all I want...
There's so many horrific implications of the power that this house is given.
Yes, but since we're living in a pre-9/11 world, this house is this house is stuck between Cold War and 9/11, and it is like, it's just a bomb shelter. It's just a glorified bomb shelter. And more specifically, all of the food that gets sucked down into it is now filling up this bomb shelter underneath it, the provision room, I guess. Yeah. With extra fruits and smoothie mix and, like, the remnants of dead other kids and families that didn't make it into the smart house.
Oh, they're, like, the fifth family that's there.
Fuck yeah, they are. They're definitely the fifth family that's there.
Oh, God, that's horrifying.
There's no way that the Cooper family is the first family to move into the smart house, and it runs as smoothly as it does for as long as it does. There are at least 4 or 5 other families they've tested this on. I can almost guarantee you that shit.
Oh, yeah.
We never go into the basement of Smart House. Yeah. Smart House definitely has a basement.
Oh, God. That's right.
Yeah. So, anyway, we get this introduction. They move in. Everything's going great. The next morning, Pat wakes Dad up at, like, 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Pat's like, no, I'm not going to wake up. This is, like, you know, my kids never even wake up now.
Yeah.
Enter his kids.
Because he's woken up the kids with, like, I think he wakes up. Ben with basketball.
Yeah.
Because it's one of his only 3 interests in the world.
Yeah.
And then it wakes up the Ange. Sister, Ange, with the Immortal Bewitched song.
Yeah, C'est la vie.
Oh my god.
And it turns the entire wall into a television.
Ian, can we just stay on that song for a second? Because I did not realize how much I missed that song in my life until I watched it.
Oh yeah?
When we watched this movie. No, I had the CD. I listened to that song so many. I listened to Radio
You had the
Disney.
Smart House CD or you had the Bewitched
CD? The Bewitched CD, obviously. I remember listening to it on a road trip from Louisville to Florida and listening to that song a lot.
Oof.
God, and it just all came back. I was at work the next day after I watched this, listening to that song again and again. Listeners, listen to this song. It is so catchy.
Yeah, that's our next podcast where we listen to old music we used to listen to and see if it holds up still.
I would, Ian, I would be so fucking down for that. I'm not even kidding. I'll just DJ an entire Radio Disney set for you, listeners, because that is truly my dream as the 12-year-old self that is still within my body.
So Ange wakes up singing and dancing to a pop song, and Pat has made them breakfast, made them lunch. Pat knows their fat content, how much food they should be eating, serving sizes, all of this stuff just from, mm-hmm. like, picking up stuff and, like, there's the saliva that they can, like, sense through the walls.
Was it saliva or did they take blood samples? She did take blood samples without asking.
Oh, yeah. She, like, pricks Ange on the finger and then, like, knows her entire body.
Did they ever sign a release for that? Because the Smart House is straight up taking bodily fluids from them.
That's the thing. As soon as you walk into the Smart House, you lose all rights to yourself.
Yeah.
That Smart House knows everything. Except...
You're basically in international waters.
Ooh.
Oh, no crime exists in the Smart House.
Oh, God, because it's all a bomb shelter.
Fuck yeah.
Except for the bathroom. The bathrooms are Amnesty International because apparent Ben asks, the way any 13-year-old boy would, will Pat follow me into the shower?
Yeah, a little bit more roundabout than that. He basically asks, like...
Yeah, he's like, are you going to watch me jerk off, Pat?
That's really the question that he's asking because he's 13. That's obviously, like, your 13-year-old self. That would be absolutely what you'd ask, right?
The first thing I asked. That'd be the first 6th and 12th thing I asked the Smart House. Just want to make sure. Pat, I'm going to the bathroom. You can't see me, right?
Can you fill us in on some of the other things on your list of questions that you'd ask the Smart House?
Can you make me a pineapple smoothie?
Okay.
Can you make me a mango smoothie?
Okay, I'm going to limit you. I'm going to say you can't have pineapple or any other type of fruit. You cannot ask about smoothies, period.
I would say most of my questions would be about food.
Okay.
I can almost guarantee you, at 13-year-old Ian, okay. Most of his questions are about food.
So your questions are purely...
Most of 26-year-old Ian's questions are about food.
That's true. Your questions would be purely, can you make a pizza? Can you make a smoothie? Are you going to watch me jerk off?
Are you going to watch... You know what? Yes.
All three of those are the questions
that they would ask.
That's solid.
So Dad drives the kids to school. They're having a great time. They love, love, love the Smart House. Dad is getting more work done than he's ever gotten done in his life by staying home. He's maximizing hours and sales.
It's very lucky that his job lets him work from home. That's a luxury.
Guys, this Smart House can do no wrong.
Truly.
This Smart House is amazing.
Yeah, and they've got those giant screens that basically we have today. It's just like a home theater.
And then we get what is the crux, the real heart of this movie that we touched on earlier, about their mother dying. And... Mm-hmm. The father asks, Papa Cooper, on the drive to school, asks Ben, like, do you think you'd ever be cool with me dating again? To which Ben says, well, we don't need a mom around the house, Dad. We've got Pat.
Because the only reason that his dad could want companionship is in the context of Ben's life.
Exactly. It can't have anything to do for his own companionship.
Yeah, well, I don't need a mom, so why would you need to have companionship?
Again.
What do you ever need in life?
Yeah, because Ben's a selfish prick.
Yeah.
As most 13-year-old boys are.
Yeah, Ben's trying to get with that girl at school, but he's like, I don't understand why my dad would need a girl around.
He's got me. Ange.
I can make noodle tuna.
Yeah, I can make tuna noodles. So he can't find that out. But then this leads to what is probably my favorite line in this entire movie.
Okay.
Which is, Ben says, this is why I worked so hard to win us a Smart House. We don't need a mom, Dad. That's why I worked so hard to win us a Smart House. That is kid logic at its finest.
I don't understand. Can you just really quickly break down that argument for me, Ian?
Well,
if you're teaching rhetoric constantly, break down that argument.
I feel like I have to teach it or talk about it, at least in context of the character, right?
Yes,
so
yes,
Ben,
yes.
Their mother died 4 years ago. He's making tuna noodles. Mm-hmm. He's entering to win a smart house.
Yes, he's working so hard
to win
a smart house. He's
working so hard to enter this thing 4,000 times to win a smart house.
Yes.
That obviously the whole thing is he's taken on the role of mother.
Mm.
He believes that he's a martyr for his family,
mm-hmm.
a role that no one asked him to be in,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So he's just trying to do the best he can for his family,
mm-hmm.
which is why he entered to win
a robot house. A robot house. That's a very specific life plan for you, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a solid argument. You don't need a mom. Because I'm working so hard to earn you a smart house. He's really playing the long game. He just knew a smart house would exist, so he worked to win it.
Yeah. So all of this kind of comes back later on that night. Papa Cooper is tucking Ange into bed, and she says something along the lines of, like, Ben feels like you're going to forget about Mom. You're going to find somebody else. You're going to forget about Mom. Dad gets this faraway look on his face, like, no, I won't. But I love you and blah, 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 blah. I'm going to go to bed. To which he kisses his daughter on the lips before he goes to bed.
Oh, that's right.
I don't have a problem with this. My parents kissed me on the lips growing up as a kid.
Yeah, same.
Just a quick peck, goodnight, whatever. I didn't think it was weird. I still don't think it's weird. Whatever your practices with your children / parents are,
mm-hmm.
those are completely your business.
Yeah.
It strikes me as odd because these are two actors. These are not an actual daughter and father.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't super bothered by it.
It stuck out to me really weirdly. I was like, Dad, no. And more importantly, LeVar, no.
We're just going to blame LeVar for everything?
He's an auteur. He's a director.
That is true.
He's trying to slip in some weird, I don't know.
Ooh, no, don't say that.
All right, we'll backpedal on that.
Yeah, don't say slip in anything in this context. Watch what you're saying.
Yeah, because if there's one thing Dad is trying to slip into, it's Sarah, the scientist. Because
Very successfully.
Yeah, he eventually goes on a date with Sarah.
Yeah, can we talk about this date, actually? Because I think that this date is lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually, like, no irony. I think it's a really sweet scene. They go out for drinks, and then they go out for dinner, and then he's very respectful of her and her time. They're kind of, he's making it very clear that he likes her, but he's taking it at her speed. She makes it very clear that, like, she wants to go out for dessert. She says she wants something, like, she wants chocolate.
She says, all I want is something chocolate, to which Papa Cooper pulls a Hershey's Kiss out of his pocket.
So smooth, Pa Cooper.
Yeah, as smooth as the milk chocolate of a Hershey's Kiss.
Yes, but logistically, gentlemen, never do this. This is a very bad call, because that chocolate is definitely going to melt in your pocket, and then you're just going to be holding out his hand covered in chocolate.
Yeah, you're going to be mall ratsing her, and it's not going to be fun.
You've created fondue in a situation we do not want fondue in.
Nah, fondue's for the bedroom. That's for later on.
That is true.
Yeah, that's a fond. Don't do that on the first date.
Oh, God.
But they kiss. Sweet.
Yeah, they kiss.
And I want to go back to something, though. They kiss, and Papa Cooper's like, I just can't stop thinking about my kids.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
He literally says, I can't stop thinking about my kids.
Because he's a good dad, Ian.
No, okay, it's fine.
Because he's a good dad, he cares about, he likes Sarah, but he still cares about his kids. I really do think the dad is one of the best parts.
He cares about him
so
much, he can't stop thinking about
him. I think that, I genuinely do think it's like one of the best parts of this movie, though, is how good of a dad he is.
Oh, he's a great dad.
He's a great dad.
He's a great dad. He's thorough, he's a loving, caring dad.
He's a very good suitor to Sarah.
Stop,
no!
Kevin Kleiner.
Stop trying to make everything terrible. Things can be lovely.
No, and it is lovely because his relationship with Sarah is really great because they're both a couple of dweebs,
mm-hmm.
and they imbue their performances with those quirks, and it works. Like, you track how these two characters
mm-hmm.
could fall for each other.
And to this movie's credit, the two actors are, like, of very comparable ages.
They're of comparable ages. They look good together. They're like a very, they're lovely.
She looks like a person who is of an age of someone who could have designed something like this.
Someone of an age.
Of an age.
They're both in their like mid to late 30s during this movie. They look great. They're doing what they
do. She's not this like supermodel. She looks like, it's like, oh, she's a beautiful woman, but also she's like spent her life on this smart house. Yeah. I like that. That they let her be this kind of like this little nerdy person that's like really, really charming in her way.
But I'm gonna put that on the back burner.
Oh God.
Because what we get happening right alongside of this is a sick ass party scene.
Yes. Because Pat has to throw him a party.
Pat threw Ben a party after watching him cry, watching home videos of his dead mom.
Well, honestly, got punched in the face by a bully at school. So Ben's kind of at a low point right now. He
got punched by the lead singer of Smash Mouth, Ronnie the Bully.
Oh my God. Oh man.
It's like the lead singer of Smash Mouth and the lead singer of Sum 41 fucked and had a devil baby, and that's Ronnie the Bully.
No.
And
he's basically Goyle from the Harry Potter films.
Yeah, if Goyle sang All Star.
Exactly, that's the perfect mashup of these two characters.
So
there's no brains.
No brains at all.
Nothing.
He's like a low rent Biff Tannen. He like can't. He can't get. He's like, come on, nerd, you're gonna do my homework for me? Like, and all this. It's like
the
such
most
bullshit.
Paid by numbers bully ever.
It's so stupid.
The movie doesn't need it.
It's real. No, really, the movie doesn't need it.
The movie does not need a bully to, like, get Doc Ock armed out of the
party. Yeah, exactly. So, but Pat throws a party. Ben has no idea about it until his friends show up. His two friends show up. With a printout of an email.
Yep,
they say,
yep.
Oh, I got your email, holding a physical piece of paper towards
because
him.
I'm assuming that they would, if you don't show up with a printout of the email, you're assuming your best friend is going to kick you out of his home.
Yes, and what happens next is the movie stops for a 3-minute synchronized dance number
to Five's
Slam Dunk the Funk.
You know, Ian, I know you're going to go into mocking this. I dug it.
I don't think I need...
All of the musical choices in this movie, I'm going to defend till the last second. I loved all of the music, pretty unironically. It brought me back to my past, and I loved every fucking second.
I remember...
Hot take.
Sitting in my room after I saw this movie, I think I downloaded that song on, like, Kazaa. And I remember listening to it, and in my mind thinking... Well, if I listen to it, the moves will just come.
Like, you weren't even watching the movie.
I wasn't watching the
movie.
You
just thought...
I thought, well, I'm at least as good of a dancer as Ryan Merriman.
But even Ryan Merriman was watching him on the screen.
Yeah, no,
You just thought that the music would speak to you.
I thought it would. Spoiler alert, Slam Dunk the Funk did not look good on me.
Although I will be testing this theory later. I'm just going to play it for you 20 times. And see if the moves do come.
Oh, the moves will be back.
We will update you on this journey.
So Ange becomes the bouncer for this party. Mm-hmm. She's turning away girls.
Just two girls.
Yeah, just two girls. Everybody else in the eighth grade's been invited except for these two girls.
Which is really fucking rude. You're becoming the bully.
Yeah.
You hate.
Including Gwen, the girl who Ben likes.
Yes.
And who very valiantly says that she likes him.
Valiantly says that she likes him back?
I think that it's something that we don't get as often as we should in these movies. Of this, she defends him against Ronnie, the lead singer of Smash Mouth, the bully, who starts picking on Ben in his own house. And Gwen's like, step off! I like this kid. And he's like, wait, really? You like me? And she goes, yeah, kind of a lot.
He has a smart house now.
Yeah, that's why she likes him.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a plus. Like, if you're wondering whether or not to date a guy and you're doing, like, a pros and cons list, then I feel like Smart House is definitely a pro.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a pro.
If you knew anyone in your school that had a Smart House, like, imagine even being back in 1999 and knowing someone who owned what we now, like, colloquially call an Alexa.
Yeah.
In their house.
Dude.
That kid would be, like... They'd be running train on everyone in that school.
Dude, yeah.
That kid would be so, like, they would just be, like, just person after person after person.
I mean, I hung out with a kid that had, like, a projector that they had, like, a home theater in where it was basically like this and it was just, like, the screen.
That's just designed to get hand jobs in front of. That's all that is.
That alone blew my fucking mind, and that's, like, what, 100th?
Blew your fucking mind. Blew a lot of other things, too.
Yep, probably. Probably. I did not ever witness it, but, I mean, like, they probably could have.
So when Lauren watched Smart House on this dude's projector...
It was a girl.
Ooh!
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, it was a girl. Yep.
All right, I'm liking where this is going even more.
Oh, God.
Anyway, the party gets busted up because Ange is like, it's 10:21, Dad's going to be home at 10:30, and Dad's been making out with Sarah and thinking about his kids, so he's on his way home. And they kick everybody out of this party... And Pat's like, throw everything on the floor. I'm going to put it down into the bomb shelter underneath the house.
Yep.
With all of your oranges and your other fruits. And so the floor sucks everything up.
Sorry, I thought you said jizz just now, and it really threw me off. I was like, just put it on the ground, and she'll just clean it up.
Oh, my God.
No need for tissues ever again.
Whoa. Holy shit.
Did I just blow 13-year-old Ian's mind?
13-year-old Ian just found so many new questions to ask the Smart House.
I'm so happy that I opened your mind.
Man, now it's about smoothies, masturbation, and specifically jizz cleanup.
Oh, I'm so sorry I put that out into the world.
So Dad comes home and sees... the girl that Ben likes sweater on, like, the foyer or something like that.
It was on a fern.
It was on a fern. It was some bullshit. I don't know. It was something avoidable.
Yeah, something that they could have easily explained and gotten away with if Ben had not given the exact...
Just say it's your sister's sweater.
Exactly. I guarantee you that Dad does not know every item of his daughter's clothing. Also, but, like, Ben...
You know what? I'm actually going to say he probably does.
What? He's a good dad.
Oh,
that is
no.
True. He's a very good dad. He's
a very good
dad. Stop this, Ian.
Okay.
You've gone too far. I'm very uncomfortable. I don't know what made me more uncomfortable, that or the tuna noodles. I really don't know. It's really battling in my head. But they could have gotten away with it.
They could have gotten
easily,
away with it.
If Ben hadn't just made the dramatic hamster face. And they hadn't just done, like, a dramatic zoom into his horrified face.
Bang! So, Dad freaks out, yells at Pat, because it's Pat's fault. Because Pat's like, I'm the one who threw a party.
Well, it is Pat's fault.
Yeah, I'm the one who threw a party.
It's 100% Pat's fault.
Yeah, this robot. It's this robot's fault.
Basically, this robot peer pressured this kid into having a party.
Yeah, I mean, didn't even peer pressure him, sprung a party on him.
Basically, he had no... I mean, I feel like if there's any argument to get away with, it's like, literally, she's aiding and abetting me.
Yeah.
She's just making it so easy.
So Dad freaks out and yells at Pat and is like, you need to buckle down, Pat. You need to become a real parent. Right now you're just a robot.
Not buckle down, knuckle down.
You gotta knuckle down, Pat.
I've never heard that phrase before in my life. I think outside of this movie.
I've heard of Three Ninjas Knuckle Up.
Ooh, I've never... But
great movie.
Wait, is that a real movie?
Oh, you've never heard of the Three Ninjas movies?
No, I have no idea you're talking about.
Three Ninjas Knuckle Up, Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain, Three Ninjas Kickback.
I genuinely can't tell if you're joking right now.
What?
This is all...
Rocky, Colt, and Miho, the Three Ninjas.
This is all mystical to me.
Oh my God. Guys, stay tuned.
Really?
The Three Ninjas, the entire series.
Oh, I can't fucking wait.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a great... Oh, they're so fun.
Oh, okay.
I think. I haven't seen them in forever.
Cool. So they know how to knuckle down.
Yeah, they know how to knuckle down.
You know who else knows how to knuckle down?
Papa Cooper.
And Pat.
And Pat. Pat becomes a Stepford House.
Yes.
So she does this because... Oh, we forgot to mention, actually, that at an earlier point in the movie, when Sarah comes over to try and, like... have dinner like a normal human being.
Oh yeah, I really love this scene.
She turns off Pat because Pat's been too mean. Ben has gone in and futzed with Pat by unscrewing 4 screws and screwing them back on again.
Yeah, because this 13-year-old kid is like, I can fix the fucking smart house.
Which he can't. Decidedly, he can't.
Although this is hobby number 4.
Yes. So yeah, he goes in and starts freaking out at this dinner. He's yelling at Pat. He's yelling at his dad. He's yelling at Sarah. And he's like, you're never going to replace Mom. She's like, I made peach cobbler. He's like, it's not Mom's peach cobbler. And he runs upstairs and he hugs a pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad comes into his room. And what happens next is honestly, like, a really good scene.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you on this one. It's a really lovely scene. I think we need more scenes like this in, like, kids' movies. It's, like, not talking down to its audience. It's actually, like, really about the grief that these two characters are feeling. And, like, there's like, the dad, his acting is really great. When he has that moment where it's kind of, where he, like, finally confronts Ben, is like, you're not the only one who lost someone.
Oh, and his voice cracks, and it made me really sad. And yeah. Ben kind of realizes that his father is a human being
yeah,
who
this
has
is a
flaws
turning point
and
for
wants,
yeah.
needs. It's the emotional climax of the movie, which yeah. makes sense because the rest of the movie speeds to a finish line
oh,
in about
yeah.
10 minutes, which we'll get to right now.
Oh, please.
So Pat, seeing that they need a real mother in this house, decides to, like, turn herself into a, we do not know if it's a hologram
mm-hmm.
or a visual representation or what. Regardless, we finally get to see Katie Sagal.
Fucking finally!
And
I remember her being in so much more of this movie than she actually is.
She's in legit 11 minutes of this fucking film.
I thought she was in at least half of this film. That's like what I remember because I so vividly remember her. Like, in that dress, like, that entire outfit is, like, seared into my brain. And maybe it's just because I kept watching the ads on the Disney Channel when they were, like, hyping it up. And so that was, like, exclusively the parts of the movie they would show. But I swear to God, I thought she was in more of this movie.
No, she is barely in this fucking movie at all. But she comes in, she's able to split herself into multiple, like, paths, and she locks down the house, kicks Sarah out of the house
yeah,
with her Doc Ock
like,
arms.
Yeah, she's like, meltdown part. She's like, you don't need anyone else but me.
She's like, we're going to become our own best friends.
Yeah.
And you're going to marry me, Dad. And Ben, you're going to grow up and marry me, too. And Ange, I'll become a boy, Pat, and you can marry me. Unless that's not what you're into. In which case, I'll stay myself.
I'll help you figure that out some point down the line.
Yeah. Ends up turning the entire house into, like, Holocaust bomb shelter lockdown mode,
mm-hmm.
To which point Ben steals away to the bathroom because he knows it's the one place Pat can't watch him because it's Amnesty
yep.
International.
Yep.
And,
Jerk off central.
And is sending instant messages, AOL instant
Ooh.
Messages, back and forth with Sarah the scientist, who is like, I'm going to break into the house and we're going to defeat Pat together, which she does, and Pat turns into a 50-foot giant Pat that's now dodging things.
I don't understand why people are dodging her, because I feel
she's
like
a hologram.
She's a hologram. She can't hurt you. Why are people dodging her giant body?
It makes...
It's just a big hologram, but it's still a hologram.
And Ben yells at a hologram, and it's like, Pat, I don't like you this way.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to go back to the way you were.
Yeah.
To which Katie Sagal... summons a rain cloud above
because
her head.
She's crying. She's sad.
She's sad.
She gives up really easily. I will say, for the climax of this movie, she gives up incredibly easily. And also, the part of this movie that I would love to fucking see is the police standoff. That's like, how do you deal with that?
I want
From
this house
outside,
to bring out guns.
Like,
I want it to go off.
I know. I straight up want to see the police standoff between a smart house holding this family hostage and the police who just are like, I have no idea what the fuck to do.
I want, like, the Spielberg side mm-hmm. character of, like, the neighbor of
yeah.
to the smart house that's just, like, constantly mowing his lawn while smart house can just always make its lawn really short and
I
just
know.
Kind of, like, he has no lines.
Fuck those guys.
But he just looks at the house, like, really, like, well, goddammit, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I want that character to be in this movie because
yeah.
the world of the film is, like, six characters.
Yeah, it feels like a very small world.
It's a small
aside
world.
Aside from the party.
Yeah, aside from the party, which is
yeah.
8th grade central, folks.
Yeah, but I feel like for that section, if you had had it a little bit earlier and really built out that world, you could actually have, like, some real stakes. Like, this family is stuck in there.
Yeah, instead, it's such an insular plot that the smart house winning or losing, like, locking these people into the house forever or not locking them into the house forever, killing or not killing this family, ultimately is not going to matter that much to the outside world.
No.
But I would like to see that movie.
Yes.
Smart House locks them up, and then Ben's friends kind of get a little suspicious.
Yeah.
And then they have to break them out.
Oh, fuck yes. I'd watch the shit out of that.
That'd be a dope movie.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Fuck.
Anyway, that's not what this movie does.
There's like a movie about that basically coming out with Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
I just watched a trailer for earlier today. Yeah.
Breaking In.
Breaking In, coming out Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Where, like, basically...
Because revenge is a mother.
Yeah. Because it's basically a movie about people who take people hostage inside a smart house. And then someone has to, the mom has to break into the smart house to rescue her kids. I don't know. I'm excited.
I'd go see that movie.
Yeah.
Love Gabrielle Union.
Dude, double feature these two movies.
We'll get to that in a second. So after Pat's done terrorizing the family and she stops because Ben made her feel bad, she goes back into the house and then everything resolves itself in about 30 more seconds.
Yeah.
Guys, we got rising action, climax, and denouement of this movie in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, the emotional climax happens in that scene with Ben and his dad, but the actual, like, physical stakes of this movie wrap up in about 10 minutes, and it's, I forget that. It just, it's so jarring. The movie is just like,
yeah, most of the movie is just like kid lifestyle porn.
Yeah, it's like, I want my life to be this way. I want my life to be this way too.
Yeah, just living vicariously through Ben, because we all wanted to live in a smart house.
Yeah, and so that's how the movie ends. Dad and Sarah are together. They're happy. Ben is cool with his dad fucking another person. Ange doesn't change at all.
Yeah. And just fucking awesome. She doesn't have to. She's a baller.
And Pat is stuck in the wall in a, like, Uncanny Valley image.
But now she has a screen so we can see her face. So I guess it's okay. But they just oh, God. This image that they use of her, where she's, like, smiling at Ben, like, ah, oh, everything's gonna be fine now, is just this, like, it's reusing footage from earlier in the movie when it was, like, her creepy smile. It's literally the same shot as her, like, creepy, I'm here now, smile. So I don't know whether or not we're supposed to be creeped out by it, or whether or not we're supposed to be like, everything's gonna be fine now. Because her eyes are saying creepy, but the music is saying, everything's gonna be fine.
I don't know, I thought that music was saying creepy as
really?
Well.
Really? So you think it was like an open-ended thing?
Oh, I think LeVar Burton is trying to make us feel unsettled.
You're trying to make all of us 13-year-olds watching it just go, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, this is a morality tale.
She's a sentient being that's trapped in here now.
Yeah, this is this is the Canterbury Smart House.
That is totally true.
Yeah. So a couple facts before we get to our final little game, so we can try and wrap up.
Ooh, I love trivia.
Yes. So this movie came out in 1999. It was the second year that Disney Channel was making their DCOMs, their Disney Channel original movies.
It's one of the classics.
It is one of the classics.
Like, I feel like most people I've talked to when we've talked about, like, hey, we're doing this thing, we want to do some Disney Channel movies, we want to do some non-Disney Channel movies, like, what would be a good one that is, like, the golden standard of Disney Channel movies? And this one comes up a lot when people
very
say
often.
That.
So, 1999, I just want to give you a little sense, Lauren,
okay,
of some
please.
Of the other Disney Channel movies that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century.
Great.
The 13th Year.
Also great.
The month after Smart House came out, Johnny Tsunami came out.
Amazing.
And then 2 months after that, Don't Look Under the Bed came out.
Fuck yes.
They had five certified hits in a year.
Shit.
Disney Channel was on fucking fire in
1999. I think these crazy kids are gonna do it.
I think they're gonna make
it. They're gonna make it work, yeah.
Ugh.
They're the true underdogs.
But now we get to one of the major points of the podcast, which is this movie, like we said, came out when we were kids. It is definitely a movie for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to do is kind of find what is the modern analog of this film? What is its spiritual soul sister, if you will? If you would say, what movie, TV show, piece of entertainment, anything, is the logical next step of Smart House?
Well, I think we've kind of already touched on a few of those kind of throughout the podcast.
Union's movie.
Yeah, Gabrielle Union's new movie. Go check it out. I think the thing that jumps immediately to mind, just because we were just talking about that last image and leaving this kind of open-ended question on, are these created beings sentient and should we feel bad about trapping them inside technology? I would recommend, there's an episode of the show Black Mirror, which is now on Netflix, which you probably have heard of. It's been a huge, huge hit. And it is kind of an approach on different sci-fi tales. They do a different, it's an anthology series, so there's a different one every episode. But there's this episode that is their Christmas episode called White Christmas.
White Christmas, yeah, with the egg.
Yes, with this technology called the egg. And I don't want to spoil it for anyone that has not heard or seen this episode. But it kind of deals with similar issues of technology and AI being these sentient beings that we have imbued with potentially souls, and is our treatment of them justified, and or are we kind of just monsters for doing that? So I think that it kind of tackles in a weird way some of the similar themes that we're kind of dealing with the last 10 minutes of Smart House.
Yeah, plus it's got John Hamm in it, so you gotta watch it.
God, who the fuck doesn't love John Hamm?
Yeah. I would say, for me, the movie Her, I'm gonna go with Her.
Great.
Which I really loved when that movie came out. Mm-hmm. But mainly to kind of go off of the idea of what would happen if Pat and Papa Cooper actually decided to take a romantic angle.
Yeah.
I think that we'd get something very similar to that. We get a pretty much the same idea of her taken in some really interesting new directions in the new Blade Runner movie.
Yeah.
With the Joy character, yeah. And then I know Eric would be remiss if we did not mention his recommendation, which is Ex Machina. Movie that is essentially Smart House for adults.
Yeah.
It's 90 minutes long. It's got an incredible cast. It's an amazingly well-written movie. It's an amazingly well-directed movie. Honestly, it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I feel like that's
everyone go watch Ex Machina.
Eric called dibs on it, but it was kind of the movie that jumped to all of our minds when we first started talking about this movie and the themes and what we wanted to recommend, because Ex Machina is just truly an astounding film.
It's great.
It's also, and it also has a similarly very small cast. It's very much this kind of like
insular story.
Yeah, it's like a kitchen sink drama. It's just a bunch of people in a house that is kind of on lockdown. Yes, yeah, it's smart.
It's a smart house.
And it's on a lockdown.
Yeah, it's a sexy smart house.
Yeah, it's a smart house filled with AI. So like it's dealing with, it also has a bit of a romantic angle, a bit of a sexual angle. But it, I think it deals with a lot of the same things. You're right. And we would be remiss not to mention Ex Machina, because even if it didn't have anything to do with these themes, it's a fucking great movie. It's
an awesome movie.
And Oscar Isaac, killing the game.
Oh, always. So Lauren, would you recommend Smart House?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you're a younger viewer, and I think especially if you were part of the generation that we were when we were growing up at the time we were, when these technologies were so cutting edge. I think that, like, it did bring me back a lot to that time. I think for the nostalgia angle, definitely. And, like, not just to be like, oh, I remember how much I liked it when I was a kid, but also being genuinely surprised at parts of the movie, like the scene with Ben and his dad. Being genuinely surprised at certain that the effectiveness of the emotional angle of this movie and the competence of the directing in that scene. Mm-hmm. So I would absolutely recommend that.
LeVar Burton is an auteur.
Yes.
I don't really know what else to say about that.
Yeah.
No, I would say the same thing. I would actually probably probably qualify it a little bit more.
I can't not laugh
anymore. I think watch Smart House if you've already seen it.
Yeah.
If you've already seen it and you haven't seen it in a while, give it a watch. It's only like $5 on iTunes. I spent the same amount of money on Smart House as I did buying The Master a couple months ago.
And an equal enjoyment on both cases.
But yeah, if you've seen Smart House before, give it a watch. Some of it really holds up beautifully, and some of it is just troubling and silly.
But entertaining all the same.
Yeah, it's still
entertaining. I will say, it held my attention the entire runtime.
Exactly. Great! Thank you so much for joining us on the first episode of Not Another Film Podcast. We apologize for the technical difficulties we had early on. We will be back soon with our second episode featuring Eric Eilerson, another co-host of ours, Cole Goff, and myself, as we discuss Nick Cannon joint Drumline.
Ooh.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.